Fundamental we're going to be studying is modesty. And Lord willing, next week we'll begin going through all the digital dangers that and tips and ideas to help us in those things. But modesty, you might say, well, why is he talking about modesty? When I grew up, it was called the technology era. What's it called now? Selfie era. We live in the selfie era. And what is the best angle you can get for a selfie? Anybody know? Up. And ladies, if it's up, do you have to worry about modesty? Yes. And then also, that's going to be in cell phones next week. Then we're going to study social media with Facebook and Twitter and all that the weeks following. Again, selfies and all kinds of videos and pictures. And then the last lesson we're going to get to, it's going to be probably a multi-part lesson, will be pornography. So we can see the need for modesty throughout all these areas. So that's what we're going to study this morning. The first question I asked in the workbook was, what does Romans 15:4 and 1 Corinthians 10:11 say about the Old Testament? Jacob?
Look back at those examples, both positive and negative, and learn from them, not repeat the same mistakes, not be involved in the same sins that people of old have been.
Correct. Whatever things were written before were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. And then 1 Corinthians 10:11. Now all these happen to them as examples, and they're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. So therefore our learning, our example, and our admonition. So if that's the case, do we need to study and know what the Old Testament says? Yes. So then I asked that question to go to question number two. Look at these Old Testament passages and tell how modesty was shown. And the first one I've referenced is Genesis 3. Genesis 3, verses 7 to 10, and then verse 21. How is modesty shown in those passages? Okay, we'll read it. Then the eyes of them, both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked. And they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. And they heard the sound of the Lord God walking in the garden in the cool of day, and Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God among the trees of the garden. Then the Lord God called to Adam and said to him, "Where are you?" So he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." Then dropping down to verse 21, "Also for Adam and his wife, the Lord God made tunics of skin and clothed them." So after they ate of the fruit of the garden, which they were told not to eat, the eyes of them were opened, and they saw that they were naked. So they make themselves coverings. These coverings, if you study that root word and the Hebrew there, is pretty much loincloth, is what it boils down to. They made themselves loincloth. Did they feel like they'd covered their nakedness with those loincloths? No, because they heard the voice of God and they hid themselves. And when God asked them why they hid themselves, they said they were naked. Did God disagree with them? No. He agreed with them, and he went further to help them along with that. And he made them tunics, coats, garments, whatever your version says, of fur. And I have some text up there. It's decently able to be read. I didn't know how this would be able to be read or not. It's Wilson says, "This is a tunic worn next to the skin by men and women, chiefly of the priests and Levites, generally with sleeves to the knees, but seldom to the ankles." Brown, Driver, and Briggs says it's a tunic, an undergarment, a long shirt-like garment, usually of linen. In the King James Version, that word is translated coat, garment, and robe. In Carta Dictionary, it says of the first century, that word in the Greek that's translated the same is a knee-length garment with sleeves, a round neck, and a loose body worn by men in ancient Rome, or similar garment worn during the Middle Ages. And also point out that God made this both for Adam and Eve. I'm going to go back to that Encarta dictionary definition for a little bit. A knee-length garment with sleeves, a round neck. Why would it be, in the subject of modesty, why would a round neck be necessary? What? Doesn't move around as much. And if a woman has a deep V-neck, what is obviously shown? Cleavage. Or, and like you said, a round neck. I enjoyed what you said, but it doesn't move around much. How many women, and I want to applaud and praise the women here, if you realize that you have a semi-loose or loose garment and you have to bend over in your pew to get something, what's typically the thing you do? Sorry for the people on the CD there. Yes, you hold your, make sure it does not gape open to be able to be seen. But God made these both for Adam and Eve. It's not just the women. It's the, we have to, when we talk about modesty, yes, we reference the verses here that in the Bible that we're going to shortly in the New Testament about where it praises women. But it's also about men too, and we need to make sure we're modest as well. Any comments on Genesis? Duke.
You might note that these were the only two people around also. So why was God clothing these people? Maybe God doesn't want to notice all that.
Good point. Any other comments? Jacob?
You know, as they're in the garden, it's just Adam and Eve and God. And then maybe, I don't know if this is the reason why, but verse 21, you know, he is about to kick them out of the garden and send them into the world. There's soon going to be other people in the world. But I think another point here that I think is important, you know, how they tried to remedy the problem, I think is just deeper than their clothes. They're really trying to cover the sin, and that brought shame to them. Their eyes were open and they noticed that for the first time. But just to think about their solution to it was not adequate. You know, that God's solution was the right one. And that's true not only for the subject of modesty, but as we think about the greater class here of digital dangers, I mean, our solutions to all of these potential problems with technology today may not be the right solution in and of ourselves. We need to rely on God.
Kirk, could we discuss the difference between dressing decently and dressing modestly?
We're going to get to the decently in order, and what goes about to the heart of the problem.
In the New Testament, when we get to those verses. 2b, I ask you to look at Exodus 28, verse 42. When it's talking about the priestly garments, and the law was given about what the priestly garments should be. And it said, "And you shall make for them linen trousers to cover their nakedness, for they shall reach from the waist to the thighs." And then I also did a cross-reference there of Exodus 20, 26. "Nor shall you go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness may not be exposed on it." And I wanted you to look at those two verses and discuss the modesty shown in those verses. Anybody have anything? So in these cases, we know the priest's robe was given, but he also gave... Kathy, did you have something?
I was going to say, we talk about modesty in terms of the women, but this was something specifically involving the men.
Yes.
God is pointing out in situations, there are situations that you need to be more aware of your modesty. And that can be applied to our lives other places. We need to be aware of what we're doing and making sure we're still modest, whatever we're doing.
It's make sure they stay modest in every situation, whether it be going up steps to an altar. He says, if you go up steps to the altar, your nakedness could be exposed. And then in Act 28, he gives them trousers to wear underneath the robe to guard them and from being immodest.
And I think the real important point, and you've implied it, but I just want to state it, is that this is what God considers modest. And the word that the Bible is using is naked for the opposite of modest. So anything shorter than what this is, in God's eyes, what the Bible, the word's using, is considered naked. Now, what the world considers naked is completely foreign and different to what the New Testament, to what the Bible, New Testament and Old Testament. And Genesis 3 is before the Old Testament. So this is, you know, this is what God views as being naked. So this dress, anything less than the dress that's being discussed, we need to understand that's naked in God's eyes.
Very good point. Any other comments?
Move into my comments about this as well. Okay, let's see here. So the priests would have linen trousers that were under their priestly robes, and it says in 28:42, cover the nakedness and reach from the waist to the thighs. From to. I know if Jim was here, he was going to make this comment, so I went ahead and included two of his points that he's made in our Tuesday Bible studies as well. If you see a from and a to, if I say pick a number, 1 to 10, what do I mean? Can you pick 1? From 1 to 10, can you pick 1? Can you pick 10? It's inclusive. From Dan to Beersheba means the whole realm of Israel, from north to south. It includes those areas. So from the waist to the thighs means it covers the waist, covers the thighs. Isaiah 20, verse 4. Similar idea, but I just want to show you in all these verses, and Eddie kind of stole the thunder on these next two, but we'll let him stop with that. Exodus 20, verse 4, so this shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptians as prisoners and the Ethiopians as captives, young and old, naked and barefoot, with their buttocks uncovered to the shame of Egypt. So in these verses, the Assyrians humiliated the Egyptians by exposing their nakedness. And also, if you turn over a few pages to Isaiah 47, take the millstones and grind meal, starts in verse 2. Remove your veil, take off the skirt, uncover the thigh, pass through the rivers. Your nakedness shall be uncovered. Yes, your shame will be seen. I will take vengeance. I will not arbitrate with a man. So in these verses, their nakedness was going to be uncovered by taking off the skirt, uncovering the thigh, and leading them away. So again, exactly like Eddie said, when immodesty is shown in the Bible, it's considered nakedness. That's the term that's always used. Any other comment on number 2 before we move on?
Children of God who recognize that immodesty is a matter of shame. So that tells us something also.
Yes, we have
these people who are far from God, but they know and understand about nakedness being ashamed, not only to the people, but in the face of God as well. Very good point. Any other comments? Okay. Next, let's see here. Next thing I said was, is there any wonder that all these descriptions of modesty cover the most provocative parts of both men and women? There's been surveys done of men and what they consider attractive and what women consider attractive. And guess what? It's from here to here. From shoulder to knee are the main areas that men and women both consider attractive. Men, of course, with the breast, the small, the back, midriff, the buttocks, and the places like that. Women, how can I ask this question? What area from here to here is attractive to women? Are women attracted to a six-pack? Or do you like the keg? I think asking the question is to answer the question there. But all these areas, from top to bottom that I showed you, are what even people in the world, the survey was not of Christians. This was a survey done, I believe, by, I can't remember if it was Time or a magazine, a common magazine out in the world. It was a survey done by them, and that's what they considered and found to be provocative for both men and women. And again, like Duke said, if the world can see it, Christians need to see it as well. I turn from that to another question, and I look to Proverbs 5. Proverbs 5, 18 and 19. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you all at all times, and always be enraptured or intoxicated with her love. In this question, I ask you to consider four different angles of these verses. And I had Christina do all these questions before, since she wasn't going to be in here. She went ahead and did these questions, and she's like, are you asking for this in this verse? I was like, exactly. So, what does it say about the relationship of Proverbs 5:18-19 about a man to his wife? Love her and her only. Well, actually, I'm getting ahead of myself here. Sorry. Your body is a gift or a treasure to your spouse. We know in Hebrews 13:4 it says the wedding bed is undefiled. Hebrews 13:4, I'll read it. Marriage is honorable among all and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. So the wedding bed is to be undefiled. Character is shown in choice of clothing. In Proverbs 7:10, it says, and there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. Question about Proverbs 7. In all that whole story, does it ever say the woman was a harlot? No. What? It's what she was wearing. She had the attire of a harlot. Her character was shown in her choice of her clothing. Our attitudes toward our bodies is reflected in our clothes. Hebrews 5:18-19, here's where we go. Our attitudes toward our bodies is shown in these verses. We mentioned the husband and wife. Man should rejoice with the wife of his youth and be enraptured always with her love. Then I ask, what about a man to another woman? What's that verse say about that? It didn't. Man should not find fulfillment in any other. Next, I asked about woman to her husband. The woman's desire, and I've put a cross-reference at 3:16, should be for her husband. A doe is not seeking out other fawns. Her desire is only for hers to ensure they are satisfied. And then I asked women to other men is as well in that case as well. Do you see the points I'm trying to make here? I know I'm trying to go at a slight angle of a verse that we normally see and talking about a man and his wife, but I wanted to show how that one verse, that one passage shows man should not be looking elsewhere, woman should not be looking to please other people. Your desire is for each other. And men should not be promoting their trophy wives. Too often, men like to show off and present their wives and show, look what I have. That should not be the case. I was making sure that point was later in this lesson. Yes. I won't make that point now because it's coming up later. Any questions or comments on Proverbs 5?
Heard on modesty. I commend you on this. And one of the points that I didn't see it in here, so I'm going to go ahead and make it as well, is that this is applicable anywhere. Okay? Sometimes I've heard this even from Christians. Well, you got to dress a certain way because that's the way that the culture dresses. And depending on where you are, whether it be Florida, whether it be on the beaches of California, when you're on vacation over in Myrtle Beach or whatever, well, that's the way everybody dresses. That's the culture. And the point that I just want to make is that Jude tells us that the gospel was delivered once for all. So it doesn't matter whether you live in Florida or whether you're vacationing in Florida, whether you're vacationing on a cruise, whether you're traveling along Myrtle Beach, wherever you are, this is applicable. Every bit of it is applicable for a Christian. And it doesn't matter what the culture sets as a standard. It's what God sets as a standard.
And the commendation, I will say, up till 2001, so I was 20 years old when I attended a home Bible study given by one of the elders up at Hebron Lane. And he had just been appointed an elder, and he is having a home study, and I was invited to it, and I attended it. That home study changed my view on modesty. I had been a Christian for 7 years and heard lessons about modesty, but none as deep as that lesson was. So that's I took some of his notes and applied them here, and then wanted to share the notes that made a difference in my attitude as well.
Today, we say when you're exposed, you're attractive. It's just the opposite. They're embarrassed, and these people are not.
Very true.
That's actually coming up in the next point, too. So good points. Jacob.
This point last week, I was thinking of a verse in 1 Corinthians 7, but even in chapter 6, there at the end of that chapter, you know, about if we're Christians, that our body is not our own. And then it's kind of interesting to me in chapter 7 how Paul starts off there, especially verse 4. He says, the wife does not have authority over her own body but the husband, and likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body but the wife. Obviously, if we're Christians, whether we're married or not, Christ has authority over our bodies. But if we are married, I think God has given us, we're in that special relationship of marriage. We have help. We ought to use that. We ought to ask each other, you know, husbands and wives, is what I'm wearing appropriate? Does it cover me enough? Because sometimes our own perception of ourselves may not be the way that somebody of the opposite sex is looking at us. So I think that's good for us to ask each other about that.
Very good points. Anything else?
Okay, next. I asked about, turn my page, modesty in the New Testament, how modesty is shown in the New Testament. I'll reference 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10 first. 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10. We'll go ahead and turn there and read that. In like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works. And I ask in those verses, how is modesty shown?
not being prideful and trying to draw attention to our bodies and or the way we look or how rich we are. It's a humility thing too.
And it says
how it's shown in these verses how they are to conduct themselves with propriety. Some say modesty, some say shamefacedness. The actual translation, if you look at the root word, is the ability to blush. And if you contrast that with what is said about the people in Jeremiah 6:15, they'd gone so far into sin, they'd lost their ability to blush. And I think, as Ken pointed out, our society today is nearing, if not already at that point. We mentioned that it was shown in going off into captivity, they are stripped of their clothes and brought shame to themselves, but yet we see people today just stripping anything and everything off and trying to get to show as much as they can without crossing the line to be illegal and kicked out of establishments. And the word there, eidos, does not merely refer to the avoidance of open and manifest baseness. It refers to complete control over the passions and desires so that they are lawful and reasonable. So again, it doesn't just show itself. It's not just referring to the base action of modesty. It goes deeper than that to our passions and desires and having complete control over them. And then the other word is moderation, or some versions say discretion or self-control, and that's from the word sophrosune. And it refers to that habitual inner self-control with its constant rein on all the passions and desires that hinders temptations from overcoming the checks and barriers that eidos proposes. So eidos gives us those checks and barriers that we should have in our lives to have that control over the passions and desires. And then the moderation and self-control is what reins us in and hinders us from being tempted or causing temptations on other people. Any questions or comments about that? Nate?
I'm wrong, but I have yet to see the word comfort come up in any of this. And I bring that up for a very specific reason. I've had many discussions with Christians and non-Christians alike about dress. And the one thing that continues to come up, but I'll be uncomfortable. There's no mention of comfort in this anywhere. It is covering to reduce the temptations.
Good point.
Proverbs 11:22 says, "A ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a lovely woman who lacks discretion." You know, we cannot influence the world or others to be Christians wearing the garb of Satan.
Then, back in
two, I wanted to get to one other point about this verse. Oops. It says, "Not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly clothing, but with that which is proper, professing godliness." It gives a not but, and this is the second one that I said that Jim would be pointing out if he was here. This not but, it's not saying that braided hair, gold, pearls, or costly clothing are sinful. If you go to John 6:27, "Do not labor for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to everlasting life, which the Son of Man will give you, because God the Father has set his seal on him." Is it lawful for us to eat? Yes. Is it lawful for us to work to have money to buy food to eat? Yes. But it's giving the emphasis is not on this, but on this. It's not saying the not part of the comparison is sinful, but where should the focus be? So in this, it's not for labor for our physical food, but for spiritual, for that which endures to everlasting life. Same is true over in 1 Timothy. The focus should not be on braided hair, gold, pearls, costly clothing, but that we are making sure that on that spiritual side, that we're professing godliness with what we do. Any comments before moving on to 1 Peter 3? Kevin. Good point. Rebecca?
I think it's interesting this description that raises your goals and calls for possibility directed towards the women. Like Anna said, it's an idea of attracting attention. Even if you're covered, it's still things that are going to attract attention to you. And why is that directed at women? Because you want attention. But there's an avenue for that, and that's very important. Your husband,
good point. And going along with that, we always hear, and I've had conversations with people as well, about giving our best or wearing our best for worshiping God. And someone will say, well, I have a $5,000 tux. Should I wear that? Does that mean I should wear that? Would that draw attention to you or praising God? And it, of course, would be to themselves. So there is that balance of giving our best but not drawing attention to ourselves. Yes.
And just continuing with Rebecca's comment there, putting it together with the book of Ephesians, got done with, that is a way that the man can show love to his wife by giving her the attention through the verbal praise that we all need. And so just kind of put that together with Ephesians. That goes hand in hand with noticing your spouse and then talking to them and expressing that to them.
Going to the husband and wife, 1 Peter 3, wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on a fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Not merely outward, again with hair, gold, and fine apparel, not drawing attention to ourselves, but the hidden person of the heart, with a gentle and quiet spirit. And one of the things I read in studying this for this lesson, and it really hit me hard, and I was like, that is a nugget of gold, and I wanted to share it with you all. And I'm going to say it twice and just let you think about it for a few moments. Inner beauty should win your spouse, and outer beauty should be your reward. Inner beauty should win your spouse, outer beauty be your reward. So, again, that goes to what the emphasis is. Their actions, their quiet and gentle spirit will win someone. The outer beauty, and that we've already studied, that treasure, that gift, that is should stay wrapped until marriage, from here to here, that is reward. The quiet and peaceable spirit, the quiet gentle spirit, is what wins you. The outer beauty, the reward. Any comments about that?
Things that I've taken away from your class, very good by the way, and I think you're hitting on it right now, but this whole modest discussion, it's a heart issue. It's nothing more, it's not about inches, It's not about the type of fabric. It's not about what the stores are selling or not selling. It's not about culture. It's all about the heart. Sin comes from the heart. What's in the heart is going to come out. And so the first thing I see here is that we need to be teaching our young people, even ourselves, what is precious in the eyes of God, and is it godly? Am I professing an attitude of godliness? And if I'm doing those two things, secondly, you never find the way you dress is a matter of showing off or a matter of trying to impress others. It's about impressing God. It's about showing God an attitude of godliness and preciousness. And so what I put on should never, regardless if I'm married or not, should never be about, is this going to be good for my wife or my husband? It's about, is this going to be professing godliness and precious in the eyes of God? A third thing that we find in this is modesty, when you see it throughout the scriptures, old and new, is dealing with wearing too much, not too little. Nakedness is about wearing too little. And I think it's important, a lot of times we use biblical words like modesty or immodesty. Every time modesty is used, it's about don't braid, don't gold, don't silver, and excess. Anytime not enough is being worn, it's called nakedness. And that's why there was shame in the Garden of Eden. That's why God made them tunics. That's why God instructed with the priesthood, this is what you wear, this is how you wear it, this is how you walk up steps, this is how you don't. Because this isn't precious to me, this is not godly. When you look back at Proverbs 5, where we were, drink from your own cistern, pull from your own well. And it talks about, in verse 2, verse 3, it talks about the adulterous woman. She's being very, you know, she's temptatious. And again, these are things that are about trying to attract the opposite sex. Or in today's day and age, even the sex. But my thing is, it's been thrown out there. The culture's like this. Listen, there's nothing new under the sun. Our culture's been sinful. There's nothing new. They don't blush. This is dealing with God's people. You know, Jacob brought up 1 Corinthians chapter 7 about husband and wife belonging to one another. Of course, that's in a sexual context, not so much in the clothing context, but there's still application there. And again, that's why I would go back to 1 Timothy 2 and 1 Peter chapter 3, is because it's about what I wear is what my body belongs to the Lord, first and foremost. My wife has rights to me sexually. My husband, not my husband, but the husband of my wife belongs to her sexually. Why? Because the textual context there is so that we don't go into temptation and we don't resist from, you know, we don't withhold from one another. But when it comes to what I wear, my body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. When it comes to what I wear, it's about being precious before God. And so it's not so much when I put on what I put on before I go out into the public eye, instead of asking, does this going to look good in front of other people? Or I need to be asking, is this precious in the eyes of God? Is this professing a godly attitude? That's what I should be asking.
Very good points. I wanted to make one more
dimension back in the linen trouser thing about the going up steps and walking, because God knew that if walking or going up steps, there would be that tendency for a robe or a garment to move or to hike. So he gave the linen trousers. The same is true today with, of course, with, we already discussed about with dresses and things like that, but with, we also have to be worried and concerned about slits. If you're walking or going up steps, does that expose nakedness? Then I asked question number five, comparing these Old Testament passages to the New Testament passages, is the New Testament looser or stricter in the commands of modesty? The same. It all goes to the heart. Except there's no guidelines in the New Testament. And people say, many people, if you talk to them about what's modest or immodest, they'll point back to and you go to the Old Testament showing what the lines that God shows. Well, that's the Old Testament. We live in the New Testament. It doesn't say anything about that today. The New Testament goes a little bit deeper than that. In the Sermon on the Mount, you've heard it said, thou shalt not murder. But I say to you, and goes to the heart, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, whoever looks upon a woman, to lust after her. He goes to the heart. So it gets down to the heart. It's the same level of strictness in God's law. It's just gone about differently, where the New Testament goes to the root of the problem, to the heart, and the Old Testament was showing the guidelines given. We must all be conscious. I wanted to get to this, and I know I could start this next week, but I wanted to get to it now and touch it. Let's see here. We must all be conscious of our decisions and actions. And I said, question number 6, who is in the wrong for a man lusting after a woman? Now I said Matthew 5:27-30 and Matthew 18:6. Is it the man, the woman, or possibly both? Possibly both. Man must control himself and not lust after a woman and vice versa. Matthew 18:6, we must make sure we take the proper steps not to make someone else sin. The woman must not make a man sin, and the man must not make a woman sin. We cannot pass the blame like Adam. We must take a responsibility for ourselves. And the thing I want to touch on is this. Reception to criticism is key. If a man approaches a woman and warns her about immodesty, the man is usually the one viewed as being the pig. The woman will say, he shouldn't be looking. He's just looking and he's a sexual pig. And instead, men can use that time to publicly confess their struggles and ask for prayers, and then also say to the woman that the questions and comments brought to her are taken in a proper mindset, that is causing him issues. If approached for immodesty, women typically shift the blame to men, saying that they shouldn't be looking. Instead, they should accept criticism, look to see how they too can help that struggling brother in Christ. Our goal should be to get ourselves and as many others to heaven as we can. I want to thank you all for the comments. It's time to stop right now. We'll touch on anything else that we have next.